This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It was a wild weekend in the presidential race, with prominent national Republicans disavowing their own presidential nominee, Donald Trump, after a decade-old video surfaced of crude, degrading comments Trump made about how he gets away with groping women. Soon, dozens of high-level GOP officials said they could no longer stand by Trump. These included New Hampshire U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte.
This is more important to me that my daughter know when she's old enough to understand this, where I stood, than winning any election.
Also, the New Hampshire party chair, Jennifer Horne, said there would be no repercussions for other GOP candidates who don't support Trump. But some Republicans said the whole situation is overblown by the press, that Trump has apologized, that his language was just locker room talk, and that Democrats had a troublesome leak of their own this weekend, comments that Hillary Clinton made in some of her highly paid speeches before Wall Street groups. Today in The Exchange, we want your reaction to all this. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Chris Galdieri, assistant professor in the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College. And Chris, thanks for helping us out. We really appreciate
it. Glad to be here, Laura.
Joining us by phone, Wayne Lesperance, dean of undergraduate studies and a professor of political science at New England College. And Wayne, big thanks to you, too. We appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure.
And also joining us from St. Louis on very little sleep, Dan Bush, digital politics editor at PBS NewsHour. He was at the debate last night. And Dan Bush, thank you again so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Laura.
Well, Dan, the big question that a lot of people are asking over the weekend, have you ever seen anything like this before with, you know, major party leaders saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for my party's nominee?
No, this is certainly unprecedented. Nobody's ever seen anything like this, at least in recent history. You had dozens of Republican elected officials over the weekend distancing themselves from Donald Trump, including New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte, as you mentioned at the top, who is obviously in a tight Senate race of her own, John McCain, John Thune, the number third ranking Republican in the Senate. The list goes on and on and on. It really was sort of the worst 3-day stretch for a presidential candidate probably in history, certainly, you know, in the last many, many decades.
Well, and you mentioned some top ranking people there in the U.S. Senate. Have we heard anything yet, Dan, from the head of the Senate and the U.S. House, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan?
So, no, we haven't. I mean, you know, Paul Ryan was scheduled to appear with Donald Trump, with Ryan's previous, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, at a fair in Wisconsin over the weekend. He essentially disinvited Trump. He said that Trump would no longer appear with, you know, the Wisconsin Republican delegation. That was a pretty strong rebuke by the highest-ranking Republican in the country to his own party's nominee. But Ryan and McConnell, you know, have a sort of a trickier line to walk because they are sort of the titular heads of the party. And so they haven't been quite as forceful so far in withdrawing their support as rank-and-file Republicans.
Well, and among these top Republican elected officials, Dan, who have said, you know, I'm not going to vote for this guy, what's the range of things that they said they were going to do? For example, Kelly Ayotte said she's going to write in Mike Pence.
Yeah, so everybody made it very, very clear that this was not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton. You know, every Republican who sort of formally withdrew their support for Donald Trump said in some way, shape, or form, this does not mean that I am voting for Clinton. It just means that in light of the video that came out on Friday, you know, I'm no longer going to support Donald Trump. So you had people like Senator Ayotte saying she's going to write in Mike Pence. That was one popular option. You had a lot of Republicans simply saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for Trump. So it's unclear what they'll do. You know, I'm sure that some will write in Pence's name. Others maybe will vote for a third-party candidate. Many might even sit the race home in terms of not voting personally. But you know, none of them said that they were ready to back the Democratic nominee.
And did anyone, Dan, say that they were going to vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, or Jill Stein, although that's less likely since she's Green Party and that's not really appealing to Republicans?
Right. You know, we did a story on the news article, just sort of compiling all these different Republicans, and there were so many flooding in. It's a little hard to keep track.
I don't believe
that anybody said that they would vote for Johnson, but maybe they have. But you know, Johnson has struggled mightily of his own accord in the last couple of weeks. Has sort of been lost in all the controversy over Donald Trump. But he hasn't made himself a very appealing candidate for the Republican Party either.
Well, again, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us, your thoughts, questions, comments about this wild weekend that we saw in American politics, including reaction here in New Hampshire. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Wayne L'Esperance, you've been watching the New Hampshire political scene for a long time. What do you make of all this?
Well, I agree with everything that we've heard so far. This is unprecedented. You know, when I talk to students about political scandals, I often go back to the election of 1800 as probably one of the most difficult ones. And probably, thank goodness, there wasn't CNN back then. But I'm not sure I can keep saying that anymore. We are in a strange place these days with what's been happening this weekend in particular, but not just this weekend. It's been building for a while. And to see Republicans, prominent Republicans, I think Rob Portman was another name that I don't think we've mentioned, is another important Republican leader, along with our own Senator Kelly Ayotte, really come out and not only push back on Mr. Trump's comments, but basically say that they're done. So we are in a different place. I think we've had almost 50 elected officials and other prominent Republicans who have come out now against Trump, everything from saying we reject what he said to he should drop out, and positions in between. So it's an interesting place we're in. The debate last night, I think, I know we'll get into this, but the debate last night, I think if you take all of that context out of it, I think Trump had a good night. I think he had a pretty good performance last night, especially compared to the first one. But you can't take all that context out of it. And I think the best you can say is that maybe he stemmed some of the bleeding. But boy, today is going to be a very important day to see if more Republicans sign up to pull out, I guess, of their endorsements and their support of Mr. Trump. This is really an unprecedented place that we're in.
Well, and a tricky place for New Hampshire Republicans, right, Wayne, given that Donald Trump won overwhelmingly here in the primary back in February.
Well, that's right. And New Hampshire Republicans, and frankly across the country, all the down ballot candidates have to really look in the mirror and say, are my chances better with Trump on the ticket and my endorsing them, or are they worse in my own individual race? And I think that's a very tough question to answer. The kind of material that came out on Friday and was the subject of all the news shows over the weekend makes it very difficult for Republicans to argue that Trump helps them, that Trump lifts the rising tide lifts all boats. If anything, I think the word anchor is being more and more used to describe Donald Trump and the impact he has on down ballot races. So, you know, there's slightly less than a month to go. Things can change. They can change for the better. They can certainly change for the worse. But going forward, these candidates have some tough choices to make. And, you know, I think what a lot of voters are looking for are profiles and courage. Is it time to sort of say enough, or do you reward, or do they believe they'll be rewarded for remaining loyal to their party leader in this case? And then I think those are the big questions.
Well, and it depends on how you define courage for yourself, too, Wayne. I mean, one prominent Republican here in New Hampshire said, you know, Kelly Ayotte is afraid of the liberal media. And, you know, so that's another definition of courage.
Oh, certainly. I mean, and some will say that loyalty is very important. And if you are disloyal and unworthy, if you turn on Mr. Trump. Senator Ayotte's in a unique position, though, because she never did endorse her. Remember, she sort of engaged in political gymnastics there, saying that she would vote for him, but that she wouldn't endorse him. And now she has abandoned all pretense of support. So she hadn't been, say, like a Frank Ginta, who had been out in support at, you know, opening for him at different events, things like that. Congressman Ginta's in a very different position if he were to decide to pull his endorsement and not support Mr. Trump. But you're right. I mean, the folks are going to define for themselves what is courage and what is cowardice in this case.
Chris Caldieri, in addition to being a professor of politics, you are a presidential scholar. Mm-hmm. I wonder what you make of all this in this sort of broader context of what we've seen in presidential elections.
Yeah, I mean, this is just I think Wayne used the word unprecedented, and that is absolutely the right word for it. And for me, the most earth-shattering thing that happened at the debate last night was when Donald Trump promised that if he were elected, he would appoint a special prosecutor to investigate and jail Hillary Clinton. And I do not think that has ever happened before, in part because that is just such a fundamental norm of democracy, that it's okay to lose, that if you lose, your opponent who won the election is not going to go after you and try to put you in prison. You know, that's not what is supposed to happen in the United States. That's what you would expect to see in some sort of a, you know, banana republic where you have a dictator who gets reelected with 99% of the vote every time.
So remind us what the context of that comment was that Donald Trump made, that, you know, Hillary Clinton, if I'm elected, I will work to put you in jail. I think he did use the words prisoner.
Yeah, and he said you should be in jail. Yes.
Yeah, so for folks who didn't watch the debate, just remind us, because that has to do with what Republicans have repeatedly said. You know, look, there have been some troublesome leaks from the Clinton campaign as well.
Sure. That was in reference to this ongoing controversy over Hillary Clinton's email account and her use of a private server in her home to conduct all of her electronic business, and whether emails were deleted or turned over to prosecutors. Listeners will recall that there was an FBI investigation. The director of the FBI took the very unusual step of publicly walking through his reasoning as to why he did not recommend that charges be brought. And, you know, whether or not you agree with that decision, you know, if you want to have a functioning democracy, that needs to be where things end. You know, when you have prosecutors and law enforcement saying there's not enough here for charges, it needs to stop there. It's really dangerous, you know, to imagine a president of either party sitting in the White House and saying, okay, these are a bunch of people and you need to go after them and find something and put them in prison.
Let's hear what Donald Trump said about that last night. Again, as you summarized, Chris, Trump said Clinton should apologize for her handling of the emails, and went further, saying he'd take legal action against her if he becomes president.
And I'll tell you what. I didn't think I'd say this, but I'm going to say it, and I hate to say it, but if I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like it.
Dan Bush, I want your thoughts on that moment in the debate last night, and also how Hillary Clinton handled the other accusation against her, a troublesome leak of her own statements that she made before, you know, bankers and Wall Street financiers. Bernie Sanders, for example, had wanted those statements for a long time. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, you know, on the AG special prosecutor and Trump threatening to put her in jail, you know, as our guests have been saying, your guests have been saying tonight, today, it feels like tonight, one long day.
you were up late last night. You're forgiven,
that's,
Dan.
That's right. That's right. You know, it was an unprecedented moment, not something that, you know, you expect out of one nominee to another in a functioning democracy. Clinton didn't really react in the moment, but, you know, surely that was not something that she was happy to hear. You know, this is somebody who has been involved with many different special prosecutions against her husband over the years, and has dealt with this for a long time for the Republican Party. So to a certain extent, it's nothing new. But to do that in a debate, even though it was a flip remark, even though it was an aside, you know, it was eye-opening and sort of marked the level of civility or lack thereof in debates. This is, you know, an unusually personal, unusually ugly debate, and, you know, hopefully that it won't usher in a sort of, you know, new era of these kinds of debates, but it might, you know, depending on who is running in the future. And on the other issue, sort of lost in all the controversy around the Trump video that came out on Friday was a trove of leaked documents that unearthed portions of the content of Clinton's paid speeches to Wall Street executives, as you said, over the last couple of years. And she made a comment that elected officials need to have both a public and a private face to their positions. And when it came up with the debate, Clinton gave a sort of, I thought, not particularly effective answer. That she said she'd been referring to Abraham Lincoln. She said that, you know, Lincoln was able to work, you know, sort of wheel and deal and work in public and private to pass difficult legislation. And while that's certainly true, and it's a sort of peek behind the curtain to how the sausage gets made around tough issues, it wasn't sort of the best defense that she could come up with. And Trump came back with, you know, I thought sort of one of his more effective lines of the night, saying that, you know, she was lying and blaming it on, as he put it, the quote, late great Abraham Lincoln, and saying that Honest Abe never lied. So it wasn't the best moment of the debate for her. But on the other hand, you know, it wasn't sort of a major gaffe that, you know, we'll end up in campaign commercials for years.
Well, and Wayne, I want to hear you on this, too. But let's just hear Hillary Clinton on the email issue on Donald Trump saying, you know, I would get a special prosecutor to look into this if elected. She admitted last night she'd made a mistake in using a private server while Secretary of State. But she said there's no evidence of national security damage.
After a year-long investigation, there is no evidence that anyone hacked the server I was using, and there is no evidence that anyone can point to at all. Anyone who says otherwise has no basis that any classified material ended up in the wrong hands. I take classified materials very seriously.
That's Hillary Clinton again last night in the debate talking about charges that she mishandled emails and has tried to hide that. We're looking at a very wild weekend in presidential politics today in the exchange. It seems to be heading into uncharted territory. We're getting your reaction, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Our guests are Dan Bush. He's with PBS NewsHour. He was at the debate in St. Louis last night. Chris Galdieri is here in studio. He's at St. Anselm College. And Wayne L'Esperance, he's a professor of political science at New England College. And Wayne, I'd love your thoughts on, you know, here's Donald Trump under fire from his own party, certainly from Democrats, about these degrading comments about women on video. And he tries to turn around and say, well, look, you've got the email problem and you have the problem of this leaked documents that with comments that you made before Wall Street bankers. I just wonder how can voters sort those things out?
Well, you know, let's start with, you know, what his choices are. He really doesn't have very many. And you know, I think this plays to his natural style. Donald Trump is not good playing defense. So somebody figured that out in his prep and said, you need to go on the offensive. You need to punch your way out of this. And so he went after the things that he thought would resonate. At the end of the day, I don't think Donald Trump added a single new voter last night. And if that's the measurement of success, then, you know, his performance last night was not a success. But the other measurement is, can he get his base fired up? And everything he did, including the I don't know what we call it, an interview, the panel discussion with the accusers before the debate began, and then throughout the night, was about firing up his base. And he certainly went to the red meat issues that would get those folks excited. One of those is email. Any other election cycle, Laura, and with Donald Trump's not the candidate, and we would have spent a lot of time this weekend talking about the WikiLeaks. We would have talked a lot more about Hillary Clinton's emails and her servers and all of those things, and instead of Donald Trump. So I think what he did last night is what he could do, and frankly, what he does pretty well, and that is to go on the offensive and to really try to hit Hillary in a place where voters do have concern. It gets to, you know, her trustworthiness, and it gets to her negatives. I think that's his play, and that's the approach they took.
Well, coming up, more New Hampshire reaction to the weekend in presidential politics. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a wild weekend in the presidential race, including New Hampshire's top elected Republican saying she won't vote for the party's presidential nominee. What do you make of all this? The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Let's get your thoughts, reaction about all that we've seen and heard over the weekend. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you before the break, Wayne L'Esperance was talking about, you know, whether this really changes any votes for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. I wonder what you think, Chris Galdieri.
Yeah, I think Wayne is right. It's tough watching that debate to imagine it changing the votes of an undecided person in, you know, Ohio or Florida or New Hampshire or any other swing state. But what I think it does is it keeps Trump's supporters enthusiastic. It means they're not going to get depressed about the prospects of the election and stay home on election day. And to the extent that those folks stay charged up and stay engaged with Trump, that complicates life for people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. You know, Paul Ryan was booed in Wisconsin and heckled at his event for, disinviting Trump. The same thing happened to Joe Heck, the Republican Senate candidate in Nevada. And so,
they're paying
a
political price for disassociating themselves with Trump.
They are. And I think for any Republican in a close reelection race, including Kelly Ayotte, including people like Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, maybe even people like Marco Rubio and Richard Burr in Florida and North Carolina, part of their political calculation is the stepping away from Trump cost me too many votes to get reelected. And I think, you know, Democrats are probably looking very carefully at their ad buys and looking at if they can win, reach seats in the Senate and in the House that, you know, a few weeks ago they were writing off.
Well, and since we keep mentioning Kelly Ayotte and her disassociation with Trump, saying she'll write in Mike Pence, just to let folks know, Republican U.S. Representative Frank Ginta said these comments, meaning Trump's comments about women, are entirely unacceptable. Granite Staters deserve an honest conversation about the very real problems our state and nation face. I'm going to continue having that conversation with them every chance I get. And then Republican candidate for governor Chris Sununu issued a statement via Twitter saying Mr. Trump's comments are repugnant, unacceptable, and offensive. He did not say whether he's withdrawing his support for Trump. What do you think about that, Dan Bush, the tricky position that other Republicans are in, especially given what Chris told us?
Yeah, this is a really interesting moment in terms of taking a step back and looking at gender dynamics and various forms of prejudice and discrimination in this country. And it's been lost a little bit in sort of the horse race over the weekend and how it affects Donald Trump's poll numbers and his debate and so on. But you have a candidate who, for the past plus year and a half, has been making comments that a majority of Americans believe are racist, are sexist. He's denigrated minorities and veterans and the disabled, women. And the list goes on. And it hasn't just been, as Hillary Clinton pointed out in sort of one of her best moments of the night, this isn't just, you know, one video in which Donald Trump described making unwanted sexual advances, kissing and groping women, as one of the moderators last night called it sexual assault. This is part of a pattern that we've seen for the last 40 years in his public career. You know, there's a story out a couple days ago that there are 20 different lawsuits against his companies for sexual harassment or gender-based workplace discrimination against, you know, mostly not Trump himself, but people within his organization, although Trump, I think, is involved in some of those suits. You go back even further, and the federal government sued Donald Trump and his father for violating Fair Housing Act regulations by discriminating against minority renters in their properties. So this is, he has a long history of this kind of behavior, and it's placed Republicans in a difficult position because this is something that a lot of people have seen and been aware of and commented on since he ran for president. It's only now, you know, 30 days out, that they've started distancing themselves, and there's been a lot of debate about what that says about the values of these Republican elected officials. You know, they weren't willing to step away from him when he called Mexicans rapists. They weren't willing to step away from him when he, made controversial and negative remarks about a past nominee, John McCain. They weren't willing to step away from him when he said that a federal judge couldn't do his job because of his Mexican heritage, as Donald Trump put it. But now, when he made, very lewd comments that seemed to suggest that, he is committed or bragged about sexual assault in the past, that is the breaking point. And what does that say about us as a culture or the Republican Party that they weren't, and Republican leaders, individuals, that they this was the moment when they said enough?
Well, a couple more questions for all of you on that. And again, this question of whether it changes votes among Republicans, among independents. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. We'd love your comments, questions, thoughts, reactions to all that we've seen in politics over the weekend. And Walter is joining us from Warner. Hi, Walter. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'll make it very short. Donald Trump is a spoiled child. How can you vote for him? What I would like to see is Hillary step down and Bernie take her place, and I think that would settle it.
Walter, thank you very much for the call. Wayne, I'll throw that to you first.
Well, that's not going to happen. I think we have the two candidates. I think if you wanted to see some sort of shakeup, it's more likely to happen, on the Republican side, although I don't think it will. I'm watching Mike Pence these days. I'm watching to see what Mike Pence does. I think he is in a tough spot. This morning he canceled a fundraising trip. There's some real interesting things over the weekend. The answer that Donald Trump gave last night about Syria, where he pointed out that he disagrees with his VP nominee, and he'll talk to him about that, that they haven't, in fact, spoken. There's some interesting dynamic there, and I wonder if there's anything more to it. So I suppose if folks are looking for a shakeup of the ticket, of course we've got to watch what the RNC does and what other Republicans do. I think Donald Trump went a long way to sort of righting the ship, at least for his candidacy last night, certainly not improving his chances of winning, but at least trying to right the ship to some extent. But Mike Pence is an interesting figure for me, and so that's where my attention is. I don't think we'll see Bernie again on the stage in place of Hillary, that's for sure.
Well, and I think to you first, Dan Bush, but maybe Chris as well. Dan, I got a lot of questions over the weekend because I cover politics. People were asking me, is there a process by which Republicans could get rid of Trump as the nominee? There was a lot of headlines about this as well. It seems from what I read, Dan, first of all, Donald Trump says, no, I'm continuing to run, and I have a lot of people who support me, got a lot of votes in the primary. But second of all, Dan, just process-wise, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah, it is. That's a good point. There's a couple of different aspects to this. The Republican National Committee, the RNC, has the authority to fill a vacancy. If the nominee resigns, the nominee passes away, essentially those two reasons, but others as well. So if there is a vacancy at the top of the ticket, then the Republican National Committee, according to their charter, can reconvene a convention where they simulate some form of the process that we saw over the summer, where state delegates and national delegates go through a voting process to select the standard bearer. But as you put it, Donald Trump is not stepping aside. He said in interviews over the weekend and on Twitter that he is never going to step aside, that he is not going to let his supporters down. And as long as that's his position, there, process-wise, is not that much that the Republican Party can do. In fact, nothing, really. And it's also important to know quickly that voting is already underway. We talk about the election being 29 days away. It's a long 29 days, but it'll be here sooner or later. But people are already voting. Voting is happening. Early voting is happening, in Iowa and Illinois, several other states. By some estimates, as much as 30% of the electorate is going to vote before November 8th. So ballots are already being cast, and that makes it that much harder for you know, a major shakeup at the top of the ticket, because it calls into question the validity of votes that have already been cast for Trump, whether, you know, new ballots have to be issued and so on. So it's very messy. And as Wayne said at this point, you know, that's not going to happen.
Well, Chris, I got a lot of questions about what about the Electoral College? What about the House of Representatives? And I have to say it was kind of a civics 101 for me, and I didn't have all the answers.
Yeah, the other option that you're hearing some Republicans talking about is you could theoretically have electors, Republican electors, who are elected on November 8th on Election Day, cast their votes when they meet in December, not for Donald Trump, but for Mike Pence or some other Republican candidate instead of Trump. And, you know, it's one of those things where it, you know, it would be really thrilling in a political novel maybe, but practically I don't think it's going to happen in the real world. You'd have to have lots of voters, you know, deciding, okay, I'm going to go up, get up in the morning, get dressed, brush my teeth, go down to the community center, vote for – fill in Donald Trump's name on the ballot and hope that in 6 weeks a bunch of people that I've never heard of are actually going to vote for someone else. I just don't think there's really any option to replace Trump.
Well, and following up on what our caller Walter said, he said, you know, let Bernie take the Democratic nomination. Chris, what do you think? What does that reflect about how comfy cozy Democrats are feeling?
Yeah, I think there are still some bad feelings there. I think, you know, Sanders himself has been making a lot of appearances on behalf of Hillary Clinton. They made a joint appearance here in New Hampshire. Sanders has been appearing in places like Iowa and Minnesota and Pennsylvania. But I do think there's a dedicated core of Sanders supporters who just are never going to view that nomination or the result of that nomination contest as legitimate.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. We're getting your comments, questions, reactions to what we saw in presidential politics over the weekend. There's been a lot going on. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Kimberly is in Concord. Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for calling in the Exchange.
Hi. Hang on a second. I'm sorry.
Hi, Kimberly. You all right? You're on the air?
Yep.
Go
Thank
ahead,
you for
please.
Taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say one thing. That any woman who has been with a batterer or escaped from a batterer recognizes Trump's behavior very clearly. His behavior is straight from the batterer's textbook. Minimization, diversion, refusion of accountability. It's very familiar to us. And the other thing I wanted to say was that Kelly Ayotte kind of gave me a little bit of hope and humanity with her decision. I no longer view Republicans, or at least her specifically, as quite this, you know, like Republicans are so awful. But the fact that she sees this gives me a little bit of hope.
Okay. Kimberly, thank you for calling in. So, you know, Wayne, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, Republicans having to figure out what's worse, sticking with Trump or not sticking with Trump. And in Kimberly's eyes, you know, points for Kelly Ayotte.
Right, and I think that, you know, I think Kimberly has a very important insight here, you know, not just for what she said about Senator Ayotte, but, you know, I struggle with what we saw yesterday. I struggle with what I witnessed when Trump brought the accusers out, and I thought, and all of the responses from so many Trump supporters really focused on, well, you know, Bill Clinton did much worse as a defense for Donald Trump, And I kept saying to myself, but Clinton isn't on the ballot. Clinton isn't the one that he's running against. And for me, at the end of the day, the really despicable thing about what we've seen in the last few days is that somehow Donald Trump's campaign has decided that Hillary Clinton should be publicly shamed for the behavior that her husband engaged in. That for me is as low a place as we can get politically, culturally, socially, in any way. And to the extent that Republicans don't stand up to this, I fear that they are complicit in going along with that. And I don't say this stuff lightly. I rarely sort of take a position like this when it comes to a candidate or a political party. But I feel pretty strongly that what we don't want to come out of this, what I don't want my 4-year-old daughter to ever come away with, is that somehow it's a spouse's fault when another spouse decides to engage in the kind of behavior that Bill did, or that they are somehow fair game for criticism. So, Kimberly, I thank you for that call. I think your sentiments are really important ones that maybe we lose sight of when we get into the back and forth on, you know, a political debate. There's a real human component to all of this.
Well, Kimberly, thank you for the call. And a couple emails on the point that Kimberly was making. This is from Io, who says, please stop saying that Donald Trump was making derogatory comments about women and similar statements. What he was talking about is sexually assaulting women. If you in the media don't call it what it is, then you're part of the problem. Don't minimize sexual assault. Io, thank you for that email. And here's a tweet from Latasha. She says, locker room talk, quote unquote, is a subculture behavior that promotes sexual harassment and assault. It is far from an acceptable excuse. I'm interested, Dan Bush, you know, among all those Republicans who have walked away from Donald Trump, it's been noted that a lot of them were women, and a lot of them, as Kelly Ayotte did, mentioned their daughters.
Yeah, they did. That's certainly sort of the approach that most Republicans who disavowed Trump took over the weekend, was saying, you know, if they were male, you know, I have a mother, I have a wife, I have daughters, et cetera, and I don't want them to, you know, to think that this behavior is okay. I agree with what Chris said, and certainly also thank Kimberly for the call and for sharing her thoughts with us. You know, there are larger human issues at play here. There's a larger gender dynamic, you know, which has been lost over the weekend. And, you know, any kind of result of this hubbub, which somehow, you know, makes it okay, as Chris said, to, you know, to blame the spouse, to legitimize the idea of somebody like Hillary Clinton being an enabler and so on, you know, does a disservice to these really difficult issues that, you know, have come up in this campaign, and, you know, that have been highlighted by Trump's behavior, which has offended a lot of people.
Well,
and rightly so.
And this language was, you know, the first topic practically that came up in the debate. Let's hear what Donald Trump said last night. Again, he apologized for what he said, and then he tried to turn to other issues in this campaign.
Yes, I'm very embarrassed by it. I hate it. But it's locker room talk, and it's one of those things. I will knock the hell out of ISIS. We're going to defeat ISIS. ISIS happened a number of years ago in a vacuum that was left because of bad judgment. And I will tell you, I will take care of ISIS.
And you hear moderator Anderson Cooper jumping in there, and he did press Trump several times, Chris Galdieri, saying, one, about the language, but two, he did say, did you do these things? You know, did you grab women as you said you would? Did you just kiss them whether they, you know, didn't want to or not? And Trump very quickly said, no, I did not.
That's right. And I think also Cooper went out of his way to use the word sexual assault in describing things, which, again, speaks to Kimberly's excellent point and the point that one of the emails made. I also thought it was striking that Trump seemed to say, well, I'm embarrassed, and that's where it should end. That you know, the problem is that it embarrassed him, and see, it's okay now. But it also raised the question, well, are you embarrassed because you did it or because it came out and it's public? And in terms of, you know, the dismissal of this as locker room talk, I mean, no, it's not. You know, when you think of locker room talk, you think of, you know, high school guys talking about attractive girls or something, not, you know, describing actually assaulting people.
That this is what I can do because
right,
I'm so
right,
famous.
And this is what we all do because we are men who do this. And, well, no.
Well, we will talk more after a short break. Thank you, Kimberly, for that call. I got some more emails and tweets that I want to share with you. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, an unprecedented presidential campaign just got even more unusual this weekend, with more than four dozen Republican members of the U.S. House and Senate saying they won't support their party's nominee for president, Donald Trump. Among them, U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Dan Bush, Chris Galdieri, Wayne Lesperance, here's an email from Peg, who says, these two presidential candidates have succeeded in reducing this campaign to a he said, she said level with no meaningful discussion of the issues facing our nation. The national networks are advertising them as if they were in a major fight. This campaign has made a laughingstock of the office of president and this country. The parties need to take a hard look at themselves and how they gave us these most flawed candidates in modern history. Wayne, I'm going to throw that to you first. Lots of distress on both sides. Yes, there's a lot of people upset, Republicans and Democrats, about what Donald Trump said. But Peg's right. Some people are not too happy with Hillary Clinton either.
Well, I mean, that's right. I mean, we heard it from a previous listener that would much rather we had Bernie Sanders as a choice on the Democratic side. And certainly all of the hubbub about Mr. Trump over the weekend has led folks to wonder why or how we got here and why we didn't have success from, the 16 other people that ran on the Republican side. I think you add to that the fact that you have such incredibly high negative numbers for both individuals. You can't help but sort of look around and say, this is a strange place that we're in, that in any other cycle, one of these two folks would be just so out of the race because their negatives are so high that we wouldn't be talking about anything significant. We'd be just waiting for Election Day. So the fact that they both have such high negatives, that they both seem to sort of get in their own way at times, I think really lead to the conclusion that email talks about, we have a real lowering of the bar here with these candidates. I will say, I guess it's fair to say, and I'd love to hear what the others think of this, but last night after we got through the first 28 minutes of, the Trump's locker room talk, that we really got to some substantive stuff. I'm not sure people would like all the answers. There were some factual errors, but there was a good solid hour of the debate last night where they did talk about policy. And I think that, maybe not a whole hour, but a good amount of time on policy. So there was something there, but it's all just, we're all very much distracted by all of the other stuff.
Well, here's another email that just came in from someone who wanted to remain anonymous. This person says, in watching the debate last night, I saw Trump follow Clinton around the stage. This felt very threatening to me as a woman, and it really shook me up. I come from a battered relationship, and I'm having a very hard time watching further news stories. I wonder what you think about this, Dan Bush. There was a lot of commentary on social media about Trump kind of wandering around, and sometimes you could see him on camera right behind Hillary Clinton while she was addressing the audience. So there was some optics there that people noted.
Yeah, certainly. And I was in the press file adjacent to the debate hall watching the pool feed. So it was just, a camera showing the entire stage. I could see where they were the entire time. And Trump, as you said, was roaming around the stage at multiple different points, as bizarrely stood behind and pretty close to Hillary Clinton, stood behind his chair, seemed pretty restless, recalled John McCain's awkward roaming around the stage during his town hall debate with President Obama, then candidate Obama, in 2008. Stagecraft matters, and these kinds of moments stick with voters, as the emailer noted. Back in 2000, Al Gore, for example, came up very close to George W. Bush as Bush was speaking, and Bush played it off well. It seemed sort of like an intimidating attempt on Gore's part that fell flat. So this kind of stuff matters, and Clinton is a practiced debater. She held approximately 60 town halls when she was Secretary of State, and she, when she wasn't speaking, was sort of sitting calmly in her chair. Trump would have been in much better shape, I think, especially with some, female voters like the emailer who said that, they recognized that as sort of aggressive behavior. If he had simply sat in his chair and sort of, listened calmly during her responses, And he certainly didn't do that. And it also recalled, you know, one final example, a 2000 debate when Hillary Clinton was running for Senate and her opponent, then Congressman Rick Lazio from Long Island, sort of invaded her personal space and sort of stuck a finger in her direction as he was making a point. And a lot of women in 2000 reacted very negatively to that. And I think we're seeing some of that now today and yesterday.
Well, speaking of optics, here's an email from Rob who says, nobody is saying that it is Mrs. Clinton's, quote, fault that President Clinton engaged in a pattern of sexual assault while in office. The point is, Rob says, that she attacked and shamed the women, the victims, when they came forward. Her, quote, champion of women salt box is a bit hard to swallow. Rob, thank you for the email. And Wayne L'Esperance, Donald Trump had some of these women, sitting in his section last night.
He did. Four or five of them were there. And Rob makes a fair point. I would say that the idea of having them in a debate presence. I mean, you want to raise their past in a speech or something. That's one thing. But I wouldn't do it. But having them there, what's the point of that? What's the purpose of that? Other than to, this is a small venue. Its families are there. At one point, there's a news report, I think, out of the Post that said he tried to have them in his family seats, in the front row, so they were in her line of sight. It was all strategy, and strategy to do what? To embarrass her, to throw her off her game. At some point, I'd like us to get back, and this may be totally Pollyanna, but I'd like us to get back to a sense of decorum around how we interact with each other. And it's certainly not unique to Mr. Trump. There's plenty of this to go around. But this anything goes sort of approach is really a race to the bottom, and I think we're getting pretty darn close to that.
Let's take another call. This is Sarah in Dover. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to say that the locker room talk conversation that Donald Trump has been defending himself with, it's not locker room talk when you're sitting on a bus with reporters. And I also think it's really interesting that he's never apologized about the people that he was talking about and their bodies he was talking about and shaming them. And, it just goes back to this kind of, like your person said, it's anything goes, and he can get away with anything that he wants to get away with.
Sarah,
and I think the same thing goes for Hillary Clinton, that she can get away with deleting these emails because she is who she is.
Okay. Sarah, thank you for calling in. Chris, what do you think? I don't want to say despairing, but Sarah's following up on what Wayne said. It's just people just don't even know what to make of all this.
Yeah, I think for people who don't attend to politics as a full time occupation, like some of us who spent the entire weekend on Twitter, it's just this flood of really negative information, and I think it makes sense that some voters are going to look at this and say, I just don't want any part of this. Imagine the only thing that you knew about a professional sport was a doping scandal or something.
After a while, you'd lose interest.
Right. It's like, well, this is whatever virtues this might have, this is just not for me. It's one thing if you decide you're just not going to watch baseball or basketball or whatever. But when people are doing that with politics, it means they're turning out of a process that has, direct and important impacts on their lives.
All right. Well, and here's a tweet from Phoebe who says, I think this election, the debate, all the events around it are a series of Rorschach tests. You see what you want to see. Dan Bush, you're out on the campaign trail talking to voters. What do you think about Phoebe's tweet?
I think she's right. I was struck going back to, post-conventions after Donald Trump was sort of attacking the Gold Star family of parents, Muslim-American parents whose son had died in Iraq, a captain in the military. And I went to a Trump rally, I believe it was in Virginia, and just asked Trump voters, is there anything that Donald Trump can say or do at this point that will make you not vote for him? And, it wasn't a scientific poll, of course, but, to a person, they all said no. So people see what they want to see in Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, for that matter. And as both Wayne and Chris have pointed out tonight, today, rightly so, the debate last night, he certainly rallied his base, and that's good for him. But he's not getting above 40%. And, he can't win if he is stuck around 40%. He needs to expand his base. And a recent Quinnipiac poll, university poll, showed that Clinton is winning 53-33 among women. Women are now majority of voters. You cannot win a national election if you lose a majority of the electorate by such a wide margin. And Trump had an opportunity last night when he, you know, was asked to address the comments he made in his video to make a direct appeal to women, to be contrite, to be apologetic, to show that he understands the gravity of the situation, and he didn't do that, and it's going to hurt him. People are already voting. It's going to hurt him for the next month.
Well, and we played earlier Donald Trump saying, I apologize for this, I feel terrible, and then trying to turn to other issues in the campaign, including ISIS. Let's just hear what Hillary Clinton said about this video last night. She said it confirms what she's been saying for a long time, that Trump is not fit to be president. But Dan, she does talk especially about women, as you said, a group that you really need to win this election.
We have seen him insult women. We've seen him rate women on their appearance, ranking them from 1 to 10. We've seen him embarrass women on TV and on Twitter. We saw him after the first debate spend nearly a week denigrating a former Miss Universe in the harshest, most personal terms. So, yes, this is who Donald Trump is.
What do you think, Wayne Lesperance? And then I have another question for you. Go ahead.
Well, I
deep
I
sigh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's broader of a broader conversation. I mean, this morning, Chris Eliza has a piece in the Washington Post talking about the pronouns that Trump used. They're referring to women as she and her, and wagging his finger. And I guess, you know, part of the challenge here is any candidate, whenever is a male candidate up against a female candidate, there are visuals that you don't want to create. There are approaches that you don't want to make that you might make with another male on the stage. And so you've got to be cognizant of that. We've talked about some of this already, you know, about his physical positioning, the sort of stalking, the joke on Twitter last night about him getting his 10,000 steps in on Fitbit. I mean, he certainly did that. He moved around so much. And all of this, you know, is sort of a lack of awareness, you know, at best, a lack of awareness of how this all comes off to others. But I think it says more than that. It says something to the effect, points to the sort of his attitude towards this particular candidate, and perhaps even to women more broadly. And that goes against what he kept trying to say, that nobody is better with women than, or on women than he is. And I think that's problematic.
Well, let's go back to the calls. Michael's in Dover. Go ahead, Michael.
I just want to point out that, I mean, I would be very surprised if any people were found the news about Donald Trump and this sort of conversation surprising, given his what had already been in the news prior, and that it seems like a little late that people like Kelly Ayotte are sort of now saying that they don't support him because of what he said. But he's been saying things like this on shows like Howard Stern and other such places for years. And again, I think that the other point is that of the two candidates, only one of them has been actually accused of rape that I know of in the past. And I think that that's not been addressed.
Well, thank you for the call, Michael. And Chris, to you, I think on Michael's point, you know, you addressed this earlier, but some people feel, including our caller Michael, these Republicans walking back from Donald Trump too little, too late.
Yeah, and there are a couple things going on here. One, I think that's the attack you're going to hear from Democrats. You know, the Hassan campaign, for instance, is saying, well, Kelly Ayotte, why didn't you do this when Trump said this, that, or the other outrageous thing that he said? But it also raises real questions as to what were the other Republican candidates doing during the primaries that they weren't digging this stuff up? I mean, anybody who's lived anywhere near New York knows that Donald Trump spent years on the Howard Stern show. I checked after the Donald Trump appearing in a Playboy video came out. That's listed on Donald Trump's IMDb page. Any intern with 30 seconds and an internet connection could have found out, hey, this rival for our campaign did something that you tend not to see Republican candidate or Democratic candidates do, which is appear in a Playboy video. So it's just really mystifying as to, you know, how the Republican Party got into a state where Donald Trump could become its nominee.
Well, and speaking of, again, women and their reactions, and we've gotten so much this morning, two major female fundraisers were quoted, I think it was in the Washington Post, Dan, to say, look, you're shocked about Donald Trump, you're being disingenuous. We all know, you know, the locker room talk and that's their language, not mine. These folks also said, look, this was 10 years ago. He's a reformed man. Aren't we a nation that believes in, you know, redemption and so forth? So I wonder what you've heard, Dan. There are major female Republicans who are saying, look, this is overblown and it's just the media and the establishment and they've never been on our side anyway.
Yeah, and that's sort of, the Republican Party, some Republican Party strategists sort of spin on the situation. They need to do what they need to do to stop the bleeding, as I think Chris said earlier. There is, a measure of I hesitate to use the word hypocrisy, but, the media also has been aware of, Donald Trump's character and his record for a very long time and has been holding him accountable. But, now all of a sudden collectively seems to be saying, this is something new and different. And a lot of people are saying, is it? Is it really? As the last caller said. But Republicans are going to continue to make that argument. They have a couple more weeks to try and say this is not that big of a deal. This is something that happened a long time ago. He is a new and different person. But the question is going to be, are voters going to accept that? It'd be one thing if Donald Trump said that when he was, 20, for example, or 15. I mean, it's something that we expect a very young that don't expect, but would be less surprised to hear from very young people, still inexcusable, but somebody who, isn't more mature. But he said this when he was 59 years old. And, as I said earlier on in the show, there's nothing to suggest that this is any different than what he's been saying for a very long time. And that's just going to be a hard argument for, people like those Republican donors to make, in the next couple of weeks when Donald Trump's word are plastered all over ads.
Well, real quick, Wayne, because we're heading it into the end of the show. What's next in the state this coming week as all this continues to shake out?
Well, I think it's exactly what you just said. A lot of it has to shake out. Will there be more video, more audio? I think that we're still waiting for the other shoe to drop, so stay tuned.
Well, and Michelle Obama's coming here for Clinton. Donald Trump is coming back as well. I want to thank all of you very much for joining us on short notice on what was supposed to be a holiday weekend. Chris Galdieri, thank you so much.
Anytime, Laura.
Chris Galdieri, assistant professor in the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College. Dan Bush, get some sleep. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Dan Bush, he's editor at PBS NewsHour. He was at the debate last night in St. Louis. Wayne Lesperance, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Wayne Lesperance, Dean of Undergraduate Studies and a Professor of Political Science at New England College. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks. The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.